Good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for June 3rd, 2012. Koyo Kubota here. Glad you joined us. It's a busy weekend for us here at Bright Dawn. We're hosting the First Lay Minister Conference. We did not have a lay ministry induction ceremony that we usually do every spring. So some of the lay ministers decided to have their own conference, and sort of an in-house conference. And so we have a small group, and they organized reaffirmation pledge. They did a workshop on making Ojuzu, you know, mala beads, and also Okesa workshop, how to make these neck stole that the lay ministers would, or even lay people could wear. And we also did a sort of a stone dedication, because we're planning a new retreat house, guest house on the property. And although we're not going to break ground until perhaps this fall, you could actually have a groundbreaking ceremony anytime, or several of them if you want to. So we got a stone, and we just commemorated that coming event. And part of the lay minister conference, those that we did streaming, I guess you'd call it, video, webcams, and so for those that could not attend in person, they were able to participate, see what's going on, and give input. So technology is a tremendous thing. And one of them who participated in that way through the streaming is going to give us our Dharma glimpse today. And I thought I'd not only introduce her, but explain her name. She's one of the, she herself says, yeah, I've got a lot of names. And given the name of Stacy. And then, since she had lived in Hawaii, originally I think from Texas, but in Hawaii for about 7 years, and she got the name Niko, N-I-K-O, which they were mispronouncing, which for Japanese, it cat in Japanese is Neko, N-E-K-O, but they were mispronouncing it, but everyone knew her as Niko. And she was a yoga teacher, and so you know how cats stretch and everything. So she was Stacy Niko Burkhart. And then when she became a lay minister and also received her Tisarana Buddhist confirmation from Bright Dawn, I took that cat theme, and cat in the Japanese Chinese character pronunciation is Byo, B-Y-O. So, and of course, our family root heritage is the Yo for Bright Dawn, or sun, and, sunrise. So she's a cat sun. You could visualize a cat stretched out in the warm rays of the sun. And so she's Stacy Byoyo Niko Burkhart. And she's living in Illinois right now, going to school. And in music, very talented, and she's the composer of the Bright Dawn theme song, which plays portion of it plays at the beginning of Live Dharma Sunday. We use it at as part of the opening ceremony for the ILM conference this weekend. When I hear the complete composition, it's a very beautiful song. And she was part of LM3 group, or Lay Ministry 3 group. So without further ado, Stacy Bioyo Nicole Burkhart.
I've been contemplating my subject for this Dharma Glimpse for a while now, and I've been having trouble coming up with a topic. When this happens, I usually wait for inspiration and don't try to force it. Then, just before I sat down to type this out, I was struck with a very simple observation that seemed appropriate to share with you all. Some of you may already know a little about my background, and for those of you who don't, I'll give you a little quick backstory. My partner and I had lived in Hawaii for 7 years when the economic crash in 2008 caused us to make the decision to close our business and move back to the mainland. For those of you not familiar with that term, the mainland is what people in Hawaii call the continental United States. Anyway, when we came back, we landed in Texas and stayed with some friends who we thought we would go into business with. Well, that plan did not work out, and we ended up moving to Arkansas and living in my partner's parents' RV for a couple of months until we moved into a trailer. Now, I never aspired to live in a trailer, since a tornado knocked over the trailer I lived in when I was a small child. Needless to say, I was a bit traumatized and never wanted to live in a trailer after that. Why did tornadoes always go for the trailers? I digress. Okay, so I sucked up my ego and lived in a trailer because it was affordable. After about 9 months of looking for a job in her profession, my partner found an opportunity in Lisle, Illinois. I said, "Where's Illinois again?" I had to look on the map. "It looks pretty far north. Do you think it gets cold there?" I said. I never imagined myself living in Illinois, yet here I am. I was driving home from school the other day, and it was about 75 degrees. I had the top down on my convertible, and I was thinking how comfortable I felt. I was looking at cornfields, red barns, grain silos, and gaggles of geese. I felt at home. When did that happen? When did this place start feeling like home? I had lived in so many places over the past 4 years that I was starting to feel like a nomad. Yet, the cornfields of Montgomery, Illinois, were telling me that I belonged here. The barns looked like candy red apples against the light blue sky. The geese were honking my name and told me that I belonged here. The little man-made ponds in the planned neighborhood I live in were so inviting and beckoned me home. Everything in my environment was telling me that I was home. In that moment, I realized that in all of my life, I have never felt such loving support from the place that I lived. It was a wonderful feeling. Why is this happening? Some say that home is where the heart is. Maybe I was feeling something inside myself that I'd never felt before. Yes, yes, that's it. I was projecting something I had all along inside myself onto my environment and making up this little melodramatic story. No, that's not it. It was the cornfields, the barns, the grain silos, the geese, and the ponds. They told me I was home, and I decided to listen to them. I decided not to question this wonderful feeling and accept that I am finally home. Thank you for listening to my Dharma Glimpse today.
Thank you. You know, as I listen to this talk about home, that is a tremendous topic or theme on many levels, and it could be a very good teaching, mindfulness tool, perspective for one's spiritual path and journey in life. On the one hand, I remember minister was talking, we were talking to a new group, and there was a group of ministers and introducing ourselves, and And you know, sometimes indeed, many people have traveled around. And one minister said that, you know, no matter where he is, he feels at home. When he spent time in New York and Chicago and so forth, he says, and to him, wherever he's at, and his new, you know, location, especially sometimes ministers in, as part of a larger organization, are transferred. And they might spend 5 years at one temple in a particular city and then get transferred to another. And so coming from that kind of background, you know, it made sense is that he felt at home wherever he was. And I think the idea of being here now and not always wanting home to be right around the corner. Many people, they don't unpack their bags, so to speak. They always think, well, my life is going to start pretty soon. Right now, it's kind of just, you know, transition. It's a different idea of home where you could say, I could really relax now, and this is, you know, permanent, and I'm really, because usually you, to say, I feel at home, I think we all know that feeling. And I do remember, you know, although since I grew up my formative years in Chicago, I always felt Chicago and Illinois and the Midwest was my home. But after college, for about over 20 years, we traveled different and lived different places. I went, and when I finally came back after 20 years being away from the Chicago area, did come back, I had lost the feeling of it being my home. And that kind of shook me a little bit. I felt like I rootless. I didn't have a home, you know. So the feeling of home is usually considered a positive thing. And I wrote an article once about unpack your bags. You're always at home. Because in terms of life stages, when you're young, when you're real young and you see your older siblings go to school, you say, gee, I'm not old enough to go to school yet. Okay. Of course, nowadays they start pre-kindergarten or whatever, preschool. But before we were saying, well, when I start school, I'll be kind of grown up, and that's, school is a big deal, and you're waiting for your next stage of life. And then when you become, of course, go to school, so, after a while you get used to it, and you say, when I get to go to high school, and then that's going to be really something. I have to go through elementary school, so you're waiting to go to high school where big kids go. And then, of course, once you get into high school, you say, we have to take all these required courses. College, man, that's when you could take the courses of the subjects you want. That's going to be it, boy. That's my life will blossom then. And then once you're in college, of course, I'm preparing myself for a career and occupation. Once I get out and start making money, instead of going to school and living from test to test and exam to exam, boy, I'm going to get a job. And, of course, when you get a job, you're living from paycheck to paycheck, Friday to Friday, or then you say, wow, now I got to get married and settle down and start a family. That's when you really start life. And on it goes. And it's as though you're on a trip, a journey of life, and it's a vacation. You're going from spot to spot, and you never unpack your bag. You're just living in a motel. That kind of attitude. And you always think going home and really is the next stage. And then, of course, when you're working, you're always looking forward always to the vacations, and then you want your permanent vacation of retirement. That's when I'm really going to live. And it would be a shame if at the end of one's life you say, gee, I never really lived. I never really, you know, had that feeling. I was always looking forward to expecting something in the future. And that expectation is a fine feeling too, but we want that kind of grounding or security. And some of us, we consider ourselves outsiders. You know, Colin Wilson, British author, wrote a book called The Outsider. This was in the 60s, I believe. And that was my Bible for a while, where he wrote about three basic types of people that are outsiders. And I think Lawrence of Arabia, Nijinsky, the Soviet Russian ballet dancer, and Van Gogh. Each of these three were outsiders. They didn't, somehow were not at home in life for different reasons. One, because they thought too much and didn't feel enough. And one, felt too much. You know, like Van Gogh, you know, it's full of emotions. And of course, these people were lucky to find some outlet in their lives, but he uses these models to try to address certain human issues. And as human beings, we all could relate to different aspects of this. And we might feel as outsiders to life itself. And part of this perhaps is, you know, the cliche phrase of, I've got to find myself. Huh? And not have the feeling of, I'm an outsider looking in. Everyone else is, you know, by the fireside at home. There was a quote in the book about George Bernard Shaw wrote a play, and there's two characters, and one character says to the other, don't you feel at home in the world? And the other character, and there's a parenthesis that says, from the depths of his being, he says, no. This might be called sort of, existential blues, or you don't really feel at home in this world. As a human being, there's an unsettledness. And these are the people, I think, that have a philosophical bent, become truth seekers, however what you want to put it. And I think everybody has this aspect or need, if you will, spiritual need. But for some, it's stronger than others, and for some karmic causes and conditioned reasons, they try to fulfill this in different ways. Some may be able to find it in a artistic career or doing this or that or maybe in more self-destructive ways if they cannot, you know, sublimate and compensate and so forth. But some of us turn to the religious path. And if we're lucky enough to find our way, find the way, and in my context, to find oneself firmly on the path, one's path, this was a great comfort to me. You know, when you're beginning the journey, a spiritual journey, and you don't need to even achieve anything finding the path is a tremendous thing. Then walking the path is sort of a, you know, and then arriving. Beginning, middle, and the end. But the begin, and maybe the teacher, one's teacher is most crucial at the beginning and the end. The teacher that puts you on the path, firmly on the path, you know, they say non-retrogression. Okay? You're firmly on the path. You're not going to backslide. You know the direction in life. You found your North Star. And once you find that, you know, it's a tremendous thing. And you could journey on. And then sometimes the last phase of, if you want to call it enlightenment or whatever, sometimes you need a teacher's help again because you get stuck, sort of. But in the middle, most of us can walk our path pretty good, exploring this way and that way, and it's okay. It's just like when you're on a vacation, you want to stop at a tourist place or you want to stay a weekend at this scenic spot, it's fine because you know you have your internal map, your direction. You could go around in circles for a little while. It's okay because you know your direction in life. And then if you start to look at the theme of home in a broader, fundamental way, I was very struck by a poem written, I think it was by a Vietnamese nun, and it's a very short two-liner that said, "Life is a vacation, death is home." Wow, what kind of perspective is this? You know, eternity, we came from eternity, we return to eternity. Eternity is not forever. Eternity is something beyond time, beyond past, present, and future. In fact, I remember seeing, I love cowboy movies, you know, Pioneer. Robert Duvall starred in a movie called Broken Trail. They had a herd of horses that they're, you know, delivering across country, and they stopped. Circumstances were such that they rescued five young Chinese women who were kidnapped from China, and they were brought by ship to San Francisco, and then they're going to be brought to some western towns as prostitutes and so forth. But they got rescued, and then Robert Duvall had no choice, and he has them along on this trail drive going across the prairies and so forth. And of course, different things happen, and some of the people die. And you just bury them right on the prairie. You don't have any formal services or priests around. And so Robert Duvall, he says, "From the sweet grass to the packing house, from birth to death, we travel between the eternities." That was his, you know, eulogy. Or his, he always say, well, someone want to say some words, you know, after they bury someone. But yeah. Life's the vacation. Death is home. We're all going home. Wow. It's sort of like T.S. Eliot's poem about, you know, finally coming home and realizing it for the first time. Sometimes we have to go away in order to come back and realize what home really is. So in the broadest perspective, philosophical sense of, well, you might call this takkan in Japanese. It's a nice Buddhist word. Takkan, T-A-K-K-A-N, means wide perspective. Not the narrow perspective of stages of life or accomplishments and work, you know. But the eternity aspect, the backdrop of our whole life. Not just the geographic, physical places we've lived or how our life is unfolding, but somehow, spirituality, existentialism of it, or the meaning of life, so to speak. Being able to realize that, then you have such a calm center, an expression on your face that shows that there's some calm center in you that nothing can shake, even though you may have tremendous difficulties in life. You're centered, you're grounded, because you know home. And we all want to be, we may go off on diversions once in a while, but we could always come home. And I was thinking about the Japanese word for frog is kaeru. And Japanese language is such that that sound, that word, pronunciation of it, can mean different things if you don't know the written character. The meaning is in the written character, not really in the sound. The way the sound of a word could mean different things depending upon the context of the sentence and so forth. So kaeru means to go home, and it also means frog. Then there's no real connection. But I found it kind of amusing that a lot of Southeast Asians, they like to gamble and so forth, slot machines, whatever, and somehow it developed that they started wearing a little frog pin or brooch or whatever, so that they and the reason is because the frog is kaeru means, and they want to bring the money home. But I thought the frog could be a nice religious symbol, reminding us that, hey, where is your spiritual home? And this is what temples are for, representing that here and now. And here at Bright Dawn, we're making a home, a spiritual home. We're making an additional retreat house on the property, and where people could come, and for those whose causes and conditions in their life make Bright Dawn their home, yeah, we could be a Mecca. Huh? However it turns out is fine. You don't have to say, well, we're going to do this, or make this kind of center or whatever. Maybe you don't have to go to visit the great religious sites in India or Tibet. Find your Mecca. That's all for today's broadcast. Thank you for joining us. Till next time, you keep going. The journey is the destination. So for today, please have a very beautiful home Mecca feeling. Thank you.